It's just good to be here. It's the news, according to me. Good morning. It is Thursday, March 7th, 9:11 a.m. 2024. It is always good to be in the studio. It's always good to have the opportunity to speak with you folks, and I don't talk much. I talk a lot. I mean, don't get me wrong. That wasn't the end of my statement. I don't talk much about why I do this show. What is the purpose of me doing this show? And I guess this is off the top of my head here. All of a sudden, in the background, you're going to hear some noise. But the why do I do this show? Well, it's because I have an excuse to drink chai. Chai with Almond Joy creamer in it. And my backup cup this morning is homemade sweet tea, with the best sweet tea on the planet. I would say it's better than... The only thing that makes it better... Well, the only reason I should say Chick-fil-A sweet tea would be sometimes, you know, really right up there, is because I can just drive through and get some. I don't have to make it. But I do have to pay for it. I guess I still have to pay for it. You have to pay for everything. So, no, the reason I want to get on this. The reason I do this show. Why do I do this show? I don't get paid for this. I don't have sponsors. I don't want sponsors. Now, if somebody approached me and said, "We'll give you $1 million a year just to do what you're doing right now. Don't do anything more. Don't do anything less. Just do whatever you want. Here's $1 million. You don't have to do a show. Just do whatever you want. Say whatever you want to say. Whatever. Here's $1 million. I would take that. Now, if I had to do a 5-minute commercial for them every show, I don't know if I'd take the money or not. I don't know. Maybe $2 million. Because, you know, after taxes, it's only going to be like a couple hundred dollars. So I don't know. I might do this. I don't know if I would. I don't know. Since it's just me involved. You know, I'm not. If I had sponsors, I would probably hire a crew and do a real show. You know, if I was making a legitimate living at this, or could help someone else make a living at this, I'd probably do it. But I just don't have. I'm not doing this for the money. I'm doing this for the sheer. Well, first of all, I want to help. I want to think I'm passing something along. I'm helping others to understand the world, and maybe ask questions that help them ask questions. And maybe even if I say something wrong, it helps you develop your sense of ideology. It helps you decide what you believe, what principles you stand on. You may not agree with the principles that I might change my print. You never know. Maybe I'll Nikki Haley on this whole thing. I don't know. Who knows? No, it's one of those things where, you know, we are all in this constant state of growth. However, you know, what, you know, the things you learn foundationally as a child, there's, you know, train up a child in which you go, when it gets older, you won't depart from it. There's some legitimacy to that. If you don't train them up in the way they should go, when they get older, they have nowhere to go. They don't know where to go. They don't have a foundational understanding, and they'll come up with anything that can be swayed to and fro. Now, having said that, it doesn't mean that if you weren't brought up in a good foundation, that you can't, you know, rebuild that foundation, learn that foundation. But the point being here is that hopefully we're all growing in this together. We're learning together and understanding life. What our purpose is here on this planet, and hoping to fulfill that, and hope that we have some kind of sense of contribution to society that's productive and helpful. That's the normal way people grow up, start to assume some kind of sense of responsibility for the world around them. The I was just thinking about this just this morning. This thought crosses my mind occasionally, especially when I do something new. I've had so many different jobs in my life. I started my first job. I think I was 7 years old, maybe eight. Actually, I did start. I think I had just turned eight when I started my first job at a store. Wasn't a real job, folks. It was kind of a phony, fake job. My parents had to take me to work, and they just called it my job. So my dad got this job. We were living in Illinois, and we moved out of Illinois, went to Ohio. My dad had a job there that was a very good paying job, and it was a fairly good paying job at the time. It was a decent job. He bought a house. I went to school there for 1 year. We were there for 1 year. We moved right at the end of the summer. I believe this would have been in 1970, I think. Might have been 1969. Come to think of it, I think it was 1969. We had right at the end of the summer, 1969. And my dad got this job, and he was working at something called a variety store. Now, it was... In this area right here, we had something called the G.L. Perry Variety Store. I don't know how those were kind of thing. And it was the predecessor to Walmart. Kmart came into town and started, you know, giving G.L. Perry a run for their money. G.L. Perry is a much smaller store, but it was, you know, I don't think it was a national brand. I think it was just a regional brand. And... You know, you can find G.L. Perry stores all over the place here. In my world, no further than I went, here in Indiana. Now, I don't think they had them out in Ohio at that time, but my dad was running this. He managed this one store. This guy was trying to become the next, you know, Walmart G.L. Perry guy. He was a German guy, and he hardly ever came to visit the place. He would come like once every couple months to visit the store. My dad got the job as general manager of the store. At that time, pretty good paying job, and we had a nice house and a pool. An outdoor pool that had this plastic dome over the top of it. A little bit of land. We got our first mini bike. Rode that around. Fell down a couple times. Had a decent little childhood there. It was kind of fun. And for a year, the year after I got out of school, I went to work there in that variety store. They paid me like 15 cents an hour, 15 cents a day, whatever it was. It was some ridiculously low amount of money, but basically it was childcare. I didn't know it at the time, but they just turned me loose in the store and said, just go around, straighten stuff up. Now, I found myself straightening stuff up in the toy department about all day long, which, you know, also allowed me to play with the toys. So it wasn't work for me. I was playing with the toys. As I would straighten things up, so I kind of mess them up and then straighten them up. You know how it is. You play with it and it's, oh, look, this is all messed up. I better straighten it up. And that's what I was getting paid for. And I'd eat my little sandwich for lunch and I'd keep on going. It was a great job. That's probably the best job I ever had. I knew the boss. Had a good in with the boss. My mom would go in and help occasionally too. She would help do some things there too, but she didn't get paid. I don't think she, well, she might've gotten paid. I don't know. My dad was making the big bucks. We were a single income family, but mom didn't work at that time. So we had, it was a good gig for me. Wasn't a high paying gig, just a good gig. And so that was when I started working. Well, then we moved to Indiana about a year later, and my dad got an even better job. He went through a little stage there where he had a kind of a tough job. He was in a construction company. He was like a foreman for a group of builders, and he ended up getting this other job that was extremely high paying job. At the time, now that, if I told you how much it was, you would laugh your socks off. But this is a time when you could buy an airplane for $15,000, a brand new Cessna 172, I think it was $15,000 or $20,000, somewhere around that range. A brand new Cadillac was about $4,000 or $5,000. At the most, it might have been $2,000. I don't know what it was. Ridiculously low prices. This is back in, you know, what was it, 1971. And so the which gives you an idea of the value of what they've done to our money system. Inflation is not necessarily you don't have to have inflation. There are all kinds of causes. Everybody has their ideas on what causes inflation. It is, but the people behind it is what you need to understand. The way they're controlling inflation, what they do with it, and how people make money on inflation. But that's, you know, I digress. We have so I was working there, and I came here, and I was working, and I started a business. My first business I started was in third grade. I'm sorry, in fourth grade. The end of my fourth grade year, I kind of caught on to this idea of I would walk. I think I told this story before on the channel. I would walk home, and when I walked home, the candy store was open. Of course, I walked 5 miles in the snow uphill, both ways. And it was usually 3 or 4 foot of snow back then. I had to walk through carrying a snare drum case because I was in the band, along with a pack mule that I had to carry because the pack mule couldn't make it through the snow. So I ended up, I would walk past this candy store on the way home, and I'd always buy candy for myself with my leftover lunch money that we used to have. We would buy our lunches. It was like 50 cents for school lunch or whatever it was, 10, 20 cents, whatever it was. I think it was 50 cents for the card. You get a card, punch card, and that's what they went to after a while. I think initially I had to pay for it. So I ended up, went in, I would go home and I'd pick up candy. Well, the next day, you know, I'd have all this candy with me. And kids would go, hey, I want some of that. So I'd sell it to them. And I'd usually mark it up a little bit. Well, I started taking orders, and I tell them, you know, I can pick up some more of this for you tomorrow if you want. You know, it was like a drug dealer, only it was candy. So I'd go past every night and pick up some more candy. I think this guy at the candy store thought I was, man, this kid's going to lose all of his teeth by you know, in under less than a year. I'd buy a bag of candy, and it was, of course, back then $1 would buy a full bag of candy. And I'd take it back the next day and sell it to everybody, and just made a little bit of extra money on the side. I don't know that I remember having any money at any time. I just don't think I never saved any of it. I put some in a piggy bank at one point. I thought that was kind of cool until I thought, well, it's not doing me any good in there. So I got it out of the bank, took it out of the piggy bank. Now, it used to be the piggy banks, a real piggy bank. I had a real piggy bank at one point. It was actually the real deal. And the reason they call it break the bank is because you would go in to get the piggy bank out, and there was no plunger on the bottom of the thing. You had to break it to get the money out. That was the whole point of putting it in there. It was savings. You'd have this little porcelain pig, put the money in there, and you couldn't get it out until you broke it. That's why it kept you from getting it out of there, because you didn't want to break the pig. But then something would come along that you really had thought you had to have in order to live your life more fully, and you would break that pig. You would accidentally drop the pig. You'd be cleaning the house and cleaning your shelf off, and oops, the pig fell down on the floor. Oh, kabob, the money all came out. Oh, that's too bad. I'll have to go spend it on some kind of toy. I heard a saying the other day. I'm probably misquoting it to some degree. Poor people are poor because they pretend to be rich. Rich people are rich because they pretend to be poor. That's, you know, I would say that is a very heavy, it's a generalization, but I think it's kind of got some truth to it. I see people around me all the time. They've got to have the best car. They got to have a new car every year. They got to have the finest of the fine things. They got to have the Gucci bag. They got to have the tennis shoes, whatever it is. They're living their lives on credit. They're completely in debt for everything. How much of that PlayStation do you own? I got into an argument with a guy the other day. Well, not an argument, but it was the craziest thing. It was a show about Volvos. Now, I'm a Volvo guy now. I have become a Volvo guy the last I guess a little about 13 years now, 14 years maybe. Bought the first one back in 2010, maybe 2011, maybe somewhere in that area. Bought a 2001 Volvo XC70 station wagon, all-wheel drive, and just I bought it for my wife to get back and forth to work. She was she travels about an hour each way, and she goes up along the lakeshore, and it's winter times can be very brutal, and it can be pretty nasty. At one point, she was driving the car, and she noticed the car in front of her had pulled over to the side. It was dark outside. It was wintertime. Next thing she knows, she gets over in the left lane. Next thing she knows, there's a deer laying in the road, and she couldn't stop. She just ran over it. Did nothing to the car. That same car hit another deer, I should say got hit by a deer, while I was driving at about 70 miles an hour, and I never saw the deer. I never saw a even fur, anything, nothing. I saw nothing. Just all of a sudden, bang. All I saw was the hood in my face. It was crumpled up in front of me. I could barely see to get off the road. Got off the road, didn't know what I hit. I wasn't sure what I hit. I was hoping it wasn't a person. Some truck pulled up behind me. This was like 3 a.m. I said, yeah, you hit a deer. It's laying back there. It's a huge one. Big, great big buck. And the cops got there. He said, that's one of the biggest bucks I've seen this year. Went right over the top of the car. I could have driven the car probably home. The radiator was a little bit messed up, but they totaled it because it had 300,000 miles on it, and it was a 2001, and this was in 2014, I think. No, this was in 2017. It was 2017, end of 2017. Had 300,000 miles on it. And at that time, my wife was driving a 2003 because I had gotten her a 2003. No, was that the case? Yeah, I got her a 2003 so she could drive that, and I was driving the 2001. So we got her I take that back. She crashed the 2003 before I crashed the 2001. So she was driving, at that time, she was driving a 2007 Volvo XC, all-wheel drive. She was driving the 2007 at that time. She had hit, she almost got hit from behind. It was in a construction area, and all of a sudden, the lady in front of her was stopping, and she went to get off, and there was only a little spot where she could get off to the right to miss the person in front of her. So because she looked back and she saw that there's people bearing down on her behind her, and she if she would have slammed on her brakes, she would have got hit from behind. So she got off to the side. Well, the person in front of her then got swerved over as well. There's nothing she could do. At the same time, the person kept stopping, and nothing she could do. At that point, she ended up hitting the person in the back. Totaled the other car. The car that, the 2003, her car, definitely would have been repairable. There was nothing wrong with the car. It was really in good shape. And unfortunately, it had over 300,000 miles on it. It was over 10 years old. I could have probably bought the car from the insurance company for $300 or $400. And I probably should have. Because the parts alone were just worth way more than that. And I do all my own maintenance on my car. So it's most of it anyway, except for the heavy stuff. But we ended up getting her the 2007. Well, then right after that, wasn't probably a year after that I totaled the 2001. So now we have a 2012 and a 2015. She drives the 2015, I drive the 2012. We still have the 07 as a spare car. So I'm in this video about Volvos, and this guy, they were talking about crash of a Volvo, something about how what happened, and there were three cars involved in this crash. The Volvo was the one that the person walked away from, which is why I am sold on Volvos. They're not indestructible, but you can't deny the statistics on Volvos in real world crashes. And every time I have had an issue, had a exchange with a police officer after an accident, every single one of them have said, Volvos and Subarus, people seem to walk away from. And that that was the case. And it was I have totaled a couple cars in my life. One of them, I was lucky to be alive. Guy pulled out in front of me. He stopped at the stop sign, then he started going, and there was nowhere I could go. Messed me up pretty bad. My wife spun out in a SUV, and she was lucky to be alive, but they should have totaled the car. They didn't. They ended up spending more money for the car than it was worth, insurance company putting the thing back together. And it took about 9 months. Anyway, the point being here that people are this guy was got on the made a comment. He said, "Well, you've got three cars. You should buy me a PS2 or whatever it was, PlayStation. I assume that's what he was talking about. PlayStation, whatever model, 2, 3, whatever, 5, 10, whatever they are on." I said, "Well, I don't own a PS1 or PS2. I don't own one of those. The reason I can afford three Volvos is because I don't buy that kind of crap. I don't know if I said it that way, but so I don't. I don't spend my money on stupid things like games. I have other stupid things I spend my money on, but I try to invest my money. Tools are worth something." I don't buy stuff brand new either. The cars I buy are not brand new. I buy good solid cars that are used and then drive them into the ground. The 2012 now has 97,000 miles on it. My wife's 2015 has quite a bit fewer. And now the one, I think our lowest mileage car is actually, well, it's my pickup truck. I've got a Dodge Dakota pickup truck quad cab. I bought it brand new back in 2003. It's an 04. And I'm in the process of putting a flatbed on it because the bed rusted out. It only has 110,000 miles on it. We have a Jeep with 170,000 miles. I think we have our 2007, I think, has 170,000 or right around 180,000, right around that range somewhere. It actually is the lowest mileage of our. I think her, my wife's car has 100. I just turned over 200,000. Just turned over. So we got another 100,000 to go before we hit a deer with that one. It seems like it just happens. I don't know what's going on with that. The point being is all the things I've done in my life. I mean, I started businesses. By the time I graduated when I was 17 out of high school. I was 16 when I started my senior year in high school. I messed around with some side businesses at that time. I was doing all kinds of things, had all kinds of interests, and I was doing all kinds of things. I was a TV delivery guy. I cleaned toilets. I cleaned, did office cleaning. I just anything I could do, I'd get a job. Went off to a school out in California. When I got a job in a parts factory, in a parts department in a trailer factory. When I first got out of high school, I was 17. Saved up my money so I could go to the PADI, PADI, scuba instructor school. You got every rating that PADI offered. So I went out to San Diego, California, Point Loma, and I went out there on Rosecrans Street, and I went to the college there, the university. They rented some office spaces and made it a college. There's probably about 30 people in the college, in the group, in my group. And we went through the whole thing, got all my ratings, became a scuba instructor, and was doing that, did that for a little while. Came back from California and continued to scuba instruct. And I also not only did that, but I also did, I started working on finishing up my black belt in Taekwondo, Chungdokwan. And I got that done kind of in the midst of a big kerfuffle that was going on with, they were changing associations, and I liked the current association. The guy was a believer, and I kind of wanted to stay with that original master guy. And they were going to leave the guy. And I, of course, right about the time I was thinking about starting my own studio, So I started my own studio. I was still a brown belt. I hadn't even tested for the black belt yet. But the other group said they were going to test me for my black belt and put me there at the studio there, or support me. Well, the other company, the other group came down. When they found out what was going on, they came down there and they visited me, and very disrespectful to me in many ways. But they convinced me that I should stay there. So I did. Stayed with them. They treated me well, for the most part. They did a little bit of a problem with them, but we ended up staying with that. I kept that thing going for about two or three years. Had some very good experiences doing that. Took some teams to Chicago and Detroit and Indianapolis. Got involved in the AAU program because in 88, I think it was in 88, was the first, 87 was the first Olympics. It was 88, Olympics in Korea. Taekwondo was a demonstration sport, and I was actually involved in that. I was supposed to be a contender, or supposed to go along with them, I guess. Is that right, in 88? Whatever it was. This would have been in 84, 83, that all this was going on. And so now, at the same time, I was going through this whole thing and then kind of finishing that whole thing. So I was scuba instructing, and I was also doing the karate thing. And I ended up getting it wasn't making a whole lot of money because it was, both of them were kind of seasonal, and they just weren't making a lot of money. It was a lot of overhead. I ended up getting a part-time job which kind of turned into a full-time job at a little summer camp teaching sailing. By the way, my dad had a marina. I was growing up through high school, owned a small little marina. So I was fixing motors and boats and pumping gas and doing all kinds of stuff around there, helping my dad run his business. And pretty much running the business through the week because my dad was still working full-time at another job. So, and here I was, 14, 15 years old doing that. Ended up getting, nowadays, that would be child labor. The poor kids can't work until they're 21. So I ended up going off to, and of course, when I was about 19, I really made a serious commitment to God. That was when it really happened for me. And I was just on fire. My parents eventually ended up moving away from the marina, moved to Goshen, Indiana. And I was living in the basement there. Kind of had a room there anyway. I was kind of living there most of the time. And I would go out and walk the streets of Goshen at night, the wee hours of the morning, just praying for the city. It didn't matter if it was 10 below zero or what it was outside. I was out walking around. And kind of ran into some interesting folks at that point. Got involved with some other ministry stuff. But at the same time, learned a lot really early on about people, work, business, all kinds of things. And during that process, what I'm trying to get at in this whole story, there is an end to this. At the end of that whole story, it's not the end of the story yet. Every job I got seemed to build on the next one. And every experience I had seemed to affect the next one. I would get a job and I would realize all the things I had learned in all those other jobs, all the other things that had happened up until that point, how relevant they were to what I was doing at that time. Then I got a job as a youth pastor. I still had a full-time job, but I was also working as a youth pastor. Then I got involved more and more. I ended up going off to Bible college for 1 year. Went to a Bible college that had it was a 4-year college. I only went to 1 year, but that went to like a Bible. It was kind of a youth ministry focused study thing. When I first went there, I intended to go all 4 years. At this point, you understand, I was already. I think I was 23 years old. I went there. So I was, as a freshman, I was 23, which meant they put me in the senior dorm because I was too old to hang around with all the kids. So and they were kids. So I did that, and then I ended up getting involved in some ministry stuff and for a little while. And I put it myself through college. My parents didn't pay for any of that. I paid for all that. Had to sell my car to pay off some things, do some things like that. I ended up being able to buy that car back later on. But so, and I worked as a technician in a lab for a synthetic. It was like a rubber company. They made all kinds of silicone and rubber stuff for tires in the automotive industry. I would test the compounds, test the batches as they'd make them. So, you know, do those kinds of things. And it was just the broad spectrum of things that I did. It was just unbelievable. Delivery drivers, delivery, whatever. You know, just so many different things. And you kind of, as you're bumbling through those things in life and you're wondering, what in the world am I doing? You know, I need to find a career. Well, this is later on in life, I figured out something else about myself. And it was all these things that, you know, I felt like I was wandering around trying to figure out what I was trying to do, God had his intention in it the whole time. He knew exactly what he was doing with me and what I needed. And I was just kind of bumbling around like a ball in a ping, you know, in a, what do they call those, pinball machine. Bouncing off everything, just doing whatever. But there was a purpose in it. I get down at the bottom and get the paddle would hit me and it goes flying back up again. You know, ding, 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 ding. So anyway, that's probably a pretty good analogy, actually. So I ended up going to getting into aviation at one point. This happened during Bible college, actually. I really felt like I was supposed to be involved in aviation. Didn't understand that at all. I'd been on some plane rides. I had an uncle that had a plane. My dad's cousin owned a couple of airplanes. But I didn't know how to get started in that. So I went out to the airport one day thinking I might get a job and then maybe could learn how to fly that way. Walked away that Friday afternoon with a full-time job starting that next Monday. Pumping gas, moving airplanes around. Never looked back. I got my private license, my instrument, my commercial multi. Of course, I had to get another job during that time because I wasn't making enough money at the airport. So I ended up doing a couple different things, and then I was delivering motorhomes for a while out of this area. One thing built on another, and it was interesting how, you know, and then I got into my instructor license as a pilot. Then I ended up starting my own little flight school for several years. Got more involved in flying corporate and charter. And then ended up getting into airlines in 1999. So it's you never know. And of course, all that experience I had with people managing things all played into my role. When I got into the airlines, it was at a time when there weren't just hiring just guys off the street. There was no pilot shortage at that time. People didn't become captains sometimes for years. They get into an airline, it was 4, 5, 10 years sometimes before they became a captain in an airline. It was 9 months I was a captain. Went from the right seat of a turboprop to the left seat of a jet. Captain seat of a jet in 9 months. And looking back on that, it's incredible to me. I left aviation for a while and went back later on, but it was it's an amazing journey, you might say, that I've been on for all. You know. Now, the reason I mentioned the other thing earlier, there's something called a multi-potentialite. Some people call them scanners. There's other kind of slang names for them, but the actual real name that explains it is a multi-potentialite. And what that is, and you can look it up. There's a TED Talk that explains it pretty good. It's a person who learns something, learns it very well, becomes very good at it, or at least, you know, top of the game, becomes an instructor, kind of reaches you have my airline transport pilot certificate, which is kind of the highest rating you can get as a pilot. And having that, you know, then I moved on. You get something, you attain the black belt, you attain the highest thing, you become an instructor. You're running your own studio, and then you walk away from it and do something totally, completely different. You immerse yourself in something, learn, because you have this, just this passion for learning something. I'm not an academic person. I'm not a book learner person at all. I cannot stand it, in fact. I don't do very well in that environment. I didn't get good grades in school. I barely passed high school. I almost had to be held back. It did not interest me at all. The only thing that interested me was band and shop class. In those two, I got straight A's. Everything else, I barely passed anything. When I went to Bible college, there were some prerequisite classes. One of them was English 101. You were required to go to. I hated it. I went through the first semester, and I did not do well. I barely passed. I think I got a D my first semester, and I asked if I could just audit the class the second semester. But the problem was you had to have that class. That was a prerequisite to some other classes that you could take, like minor prophets and some of the other things I wanted to study. Of course, now I'm paying the bill. I'm paying for my education. I finally went up there and said, you know, I'm paying for this. Can I please just take these other classes? I know that this is a prerequisite, but can I just do the semester, this semester? There were some classes that were just one semester. So I said, can I just do these classes? I just really want to go through these classes. The grades aren't that big and important to me. I just really want to go through the class. Straight A's. I wanted to do those classes. The papers that I would write. Now, of course, the teacher was concerned because I had this one paper that came in late. And I said, I kind of got the due date mixed up. I thought it was after spring break, and it was before spring break. And I thought it was after spring break we were supposed to turn it in. And right after spring break, we came back, and I'm on the elevator, and he's like, well, you haven't turned your paper in yet. I was like, oh, I thought it was due tomorrow. He said, no, it was due last week. I said, oh, I guess I messed that up. He still gave me an A. It was supposed to be a grade down for every day you were late. I didn't know what I was going through at the time. I didn't understand myself at that point why I was, because I kept trying to figure out what I was supposed to do in life. I was doing life. That's what I was doing. The way God made me to go after things and be this, the person that I am. And one thing built on another. And God bless the folks that can do a job and do it for 40 years, and we need those people too. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying it's been easy, that's for sure. So, having said all of that, I hope it encourages you out there. If you're struggling with what you're supposed to be doing and where you are in life, you might be right where you were supposed to be. You might not be. But realizing you're not where you're supposed to be might be where you're supposed to be. Just saying. I know it's complicated. It's a crazy mess. But that's the messiness of life. I heard a guy the other day. He was a piano player for all these different. He was a studio musician, and he helped so many different musicians write music. He's an incredible pianist, and he had some of the most iconic piano lines and some of the stuff he did, some of the piano riffs he did and stuff. This guy was interviewing this guy. Now, he has since become a Christian, but he was. He ended up making a statement. He said something about a singer, and the limits of a singer. In other words, if someone can sing perfectly on pitch, everything's perfectly on pitch, and you probably don't know who those people are. It's the people who have a little bit of a limitation in their voice. They have a little rasp. They have a little bit of, there's a character. There's a nuance to their voice. There's a flaw. Those are the people, somehow, it's like their limit. He said something about their limitations. He didn't say this in a bad way. He said their limitations give them definition. He didn't say it defines them. He said it gives them definition. He said it in a way, and I'm probably misquoting him in what he said, but that was the gist of what he said. He didn't say their limitations define them. If you hear that statement, that's not the way. Your limitations do not define you. But the way he said it hit me between the eyes. Because it's so true, and I think everybody needs to hear that. Especially when you put God into the equation and realize where your limits are is where he begins. Where your abilities end, God begins. That's where grace starts from that point forward. Grace is there to complete the purpose. Anyway, I digress. Let's talk about politics a little bit. Changing course. There's your little story for the day. Boy, that took 30 minutes. It was supposed to be a 5-minute little spiel. I had not even planned any of that. That was not on my notes. Actually, it's almost 40 minutes. But I digress. Let's talk about crime in New York City. Let's talk about something more positive. I'm positive there's crime in New York City. It has gotten so bad, folks. It has gotten so bad. Two things that happened, they basically happened in 2019. Now, keep in mind, this was the years of, you know, everybody's pushing back against Trump. There were, you know, all kinds of protests and all kinds of, and you think it was bad then. They're ramping up for it now. Can you imagine the next 4 years of Trump? And they're already going into the whole thing of Trump's going to kill us. Oh, he's going to be a tyrant. He's going to be a dictator. Our democracy is going to be gone. They are drumming themselves up in their brains to the point where it is getting a little bit frightening, folks. The things that they're saying, I'm going to have some clips tomorrow. These people are in a panic. Now, desperate people do desperate things, but what gets me most concerned is the rhetoric that we're hearing. I don't think half of them believe the rhetoric that they're saying. The problem is their listeners do. And there are people out there who are psychologically unbalanced, worse than Keith Olbermann, who is just, he's off the charts. If anybody took the actual statements that Keith Olbermann has made, Keith Olbermann made some statements. One of the statements he made, this is back when Trump was still in office. He said, the likes of Sean Hannity and anybody who listens to him and the people who follow, you know, vote for Trump and blah, 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 should be imprisoned and removed from society. That's what Keith Olbermann thinks. He has made statements like that on a regular basis, at least weekly, for the last 7 years. And nobody takes the guy seriously. Who listens to these people? How does this person still have a platform of any kind? Rachel Maddow, the things she's been saying, she's been invited onto The View and made some horrendous statements and not confronted or challenged by any of it. They sit there and they agree totally. They sit there and nod their heads. How in the world are we supposed to believe that those people are not going to be radical, violent individuals who will not be in trouble? Look at the guy who went to kill, was it Kavanaugh? Packed up his gun, started driving there, ended up turning himself in because he finally realized he was off. What if he hadn't? And this was all over the Roe v. Wade thing. And they're still pushing that. That's still an issue. Jen Psaki thinks that Donald Trump has scared people from the immigrants, of the immigrants. We're scared of the immigrants now. We're scared of people who don't understand. He's indoctrinated them. We're supposed to believe, we're supposed to think that we're brainwashed by Donald Trump because the border is insecure, because it's, he's scaring us with the border. He's using it as a tool. There's several million people in this country that shouldn't be here. Probably several million, and we don't know who they are. The potential for something to go very, very wrong in this country is, and I think it's, I think they're going to try something before the election. I think there's going to be a major thing. It's either, they got all things, all kinds of things on the table, but it's just going to be interesting to see how that all works out. The crime rate in New York City is so bad right now. A lot of the businesses are moving out. Grocery stores are moving out. The little drug stores that run every corner, they're moving out. If they're not moving out, they're locking everything up in the store. You go in the store, you have to ask for something to get out, to be unlocked from a cabinet. They don't even leave the handles on the cabinets. They just have locks on everything. They have gangs of thieves running around stealing things like from merchandise. They're stealing merchandise. There are several gangs. They call them scooter gangs. Now, this is very common down south in South America. The kind, of course, now down in South America, there's places that they have scooter gangs. But what a scooter gang is, there's like two. Let me just put it this way: if you're along the street corner or walking down the street on a sidewalk, wherever you are, and two guys on a scooter come down the street, get out of there now. That is not normal. Two guys on a scooter. What happens is one guy pulls up, the other guy jumps off. He robs you. He jumps back on the scooter and they take off. Usually the guy driving the scooter will pull the gun out. He'll stop, pull the gun out as the other guy's getting off. So the other guy's there to take your stuff. And then they drive off. They're wondering why the crime rate is so high in New York right now. Why is it so bad? We need to spend. So they're putting out like $10 million or whatever it was, some ridiculous amount of money, $50 million. I mean, it's $50 million. They're going to spend $10 million for the Justice Department, $50 million for something else, for the police department, whatever it is. But they still have rules in place like no bail. So you get caught and they just turn you loose. They just turn you loose. Come back in, 2 weeks for your, okay, yeah, I'll do that. They don't even know who they are. And you have the immigration thing where there's people coming in from other cities that come in there to rob things in New York just because they know it's easier there because they know they can get away with it. And they leave, they go back to their, sometimes they'll go from Florida to New York, do their thievery, and then they go back to, we're stealing several hundred thousand dollars worth of stuff. It is insane. What can we do to protect every? Because this is the problem. New York, you try to get a carry permit in New York. There are security guards in these stores that aren't even allowed to carry.
Well, it's just going to turn into the Wild West.
Yeah, that's what it's going to be. Because right now you've got a third world country where people can't protect themselves. And they're just gutting the place. You're losing all your stores. You're losing all your businesses. People don't shop downtown anymore. Because it's just ridiculous. And you wonder why things are collapsing around you. Well, we just need to raise taxes and spend more money. Where's all that money going to go? And you got so much corruption in some of these governors, some of these AGs that they're doing what they're doing with their million-dollar budgets. They're scamming the system. They're living high life. Look at Fanny. Fanny and her boyfriend going on, what was it, 10 vacations in less than 2 years? All over the world? Spending $1 million basically over the last 2 years just on vacations. Just blowing through cash. And then she sits there on the stand and denies the whole thing. You're lying. You're lying. Now she's there's all kinds of weird witness stuff going. She's going to be disqualified. She should be disbarred. No reason for her to have it. She shouldn't even practice in that law. She's deceptive. She's lying on stand. She's bringing several people down with her. In fact, she's going to be disqualified from the case if she hasn't already been. There's going to be a ruling soon, I think, on that whole thing. That whole thing's falling apart. Now, that doesn't take the case away from Donald Trump. But here's the problem: the next person in there might look at the case and go, "We can't charge this case. This is ridiculous," because it is a sham case. It's just as bad as these other cases that are just being. Unfortunately for Jack Smith, prosecutor on the documents case, that's been held off now until the Supreme Court looks at it. It's going to be April. My understanding is it's too late for them to get everything ramped back up again and he's going to be the presumptive. He's already the presumptive nominee. He's going to be the nominee by April officially, because he'll have all the delegates at that point from the primaries. And yeah, it is a mess. It's a mess. You know, there's the border, of course, is all, speaking of a mess, the border is a mess. And I guess there's this rumor about Donald Trump telling the GOP, now this is all coming from MSNBC and CNN, so I don't believe any of it. Well, I do, well, let's put it this way. They're making these statements saying that Donald Trump has told the GOP that they have to have, like he's told governors and stuff, not to solve the problem because he needs that to win the election in 2024. He needs it for this November. He needs the crisis to continue so he can use it to bash Joe Biden. Here again, of course, now a lot of people have said, well, you know, Nikki Haley spent $110 million on her campaign that she could have used, you know, that the GOP could have used for furthering, for going after Donald Trump, or going after Joe Biden and, you know, going after their opponents. I said, well, you know, Joe Biden's not going to. And here again, this just reiterates my opinion about this whole thing. People are wasting resources running against Joe Biden when Joe Biden's not going to be the candidate. This is a bait and switch. I don't know if it's going to be the October surprise or not. I don't know if that's going to happen. I'm not sure how that's going to happen. And by the way, this decision about taking Trump off the ballot in Colorado, 9-0. MSNBC and CNN have both, all the commentators there, their heads have, all their legal analysts who said, yo, this is going to be, yes, they have to. Well, he's an insurrectionist, even though they didn't. Well, they didn't say he wasn't an insurrectionist. They didn't say he was. They're saying, oh, he got off on a technicality, on a constitutional technicality. Oh, dang, that Constitution got in the way. This is the kind of craziness. You know, you got people like Tubin. I won't talk about what he did on live camera in the Zoom call. We had these people are incredulous, and they're still going on. This is what Trump derangement syndrome does. They are all deranged, and they just keep feeding on each other. Michael Cohen, convicted liar, perjurer, convicted of perjury, has been a commentator on MSNBC for I don't know how long now, or so was it CNN? I digress. It's the same thing. And now he's being asked to testify again in another case.
where he testifies that he lied about lying. This guy is a chronic liar. I've listened to this one guy. It's not a guy I usually listen to. He kind of analyzed this case that Cohen was involved in. And he's literally testifying that he lied about lying on the stand. And he said a whole bunch of other things that were lies. And of course, they keep saying that, you know, Donald Trump incited an insurrection, participated in an insurrection. He's an insurrectionist. He keeps saying that. He's not been charged with that at all, ever. It's their court of public opinion, in their opinion. They continue to just drill down on. Keep repeating it. Everybody, you know, the masses that are nutcases that are out there are going to keep believing it. This is going to be, now there was an assassination attempt, I guess, on Volodymyr Zelensky. I would not be surprised if there will be. There was another poll out, I guess, recently where I think Trump and Biden were tied 33-33. JFK was 26%. Now, this is an outlier poll. This is crazy, crazy stuff going on. JFK Jr., not JFK Jr., what is his name? RFK Jr. He's third party just can't pull it off. If anything's possible, but it's just really unlikely that he's going to be able to pull it off. Now, would he be better than Biden? Absolutely better than Biden. I would take a traditional Democrat over this leftist lunatics 10-1. But I still cannot. There are things in the Democrat platform, in the party that I cannot. I will oppose. I would probably pick. I'd probably pick Junior over Nikki Haley, though. And the reason is because she's a very deceptive person. The neocon establishment Republican, I think, is probably more dangerous than a traditional Democrat. That's where I'm at with that whole thing right now, because of the deception. Because of what happens behind the scenes when you think things are going, you know, your way, that your principles are being represented. They're very good at fooling people into that. Just saying. So, having said all that, I have the show tomorrow. Hopefully, will be. I don't think it's probably not going to be live. Just knowing how things are going to go tomorrow. However, it will probably be from the international worldwide headquarters, the main studio, and it will be. Let's just say it's going to be. There's going to be a few sound clips, sound bites put together for that whole process. Once again, thank you for listening. Thank you for supporting, folks. It means a lot to me that folks, I don't need your financial support. What supports me is knowing that you're listening. Some of you have responded. Some of that's always encouraging. And I really do appreciate that. Like I said, I'm not doing this for sponsorships. I'm not doing this for money. I'm doing this hopefully as an encouragement to some people. Just as a way of getting the news out, reporting things that maybe you don't have time to formulate yourself, to listen to find out about. It's the only reason I'm doing it. Plus, it's just for my own sanity because I feel like I'm talking to somebody about all this baloney that's going on. But I'm with you on that. Thanks for listening, folks. God bless. Have a great evening. And I will be on here hopefully tomorrow if all goes well. God bless.